Is this loud enough for everybody?
You won't be able to hear them. There's
okay.
No speaker.
Oh, okay.
Can you hear us okay?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Tell us if we need to talk louder. Louder? Okay. No problem. So we are here tonight to talk about executive functioning skills. There are many different references that talk about executive functioning skills. The book that we reference the most is called Smart But Scattered. They break theirs into 11 different skills. So that's where most of our information is coming from, but there's lots of other great resources that also talk about the skills, but they may call them different things. And we have those included in our presentation as well. So executive function skills are the fundamental brain-based skills required to execute tasks, getting organized, planning, starting work, staying on task, controlling impulses, regulating your emotions, being adaptable and resilient, etc. They're broken into two different subtypes. There's the thinking skills and the doing skills. So the thinking skills are designed to select and achieve goals. Okay, well, thank you. Are designed to select and achieve goals or to develop situations to problems. They help create a picture or a path to the goal. To reach the goal, your child needs the second set of skills, which are the behavioral skills. Those enable the child to do what they need to accomplish the task. So to talk about the different types of executive functioning skills, the thinking or cognition skills are working memory, planning or prioritization, organization, time management, and metacognition. The behavioral skills are response inhibition, emotional control, sustained attention, task initiation, goal-directed persistence, and flexibility. So we're going to go through each and every one of those areas and tell you what that means, when it develops, what you should expect in that area at each age level from, you know, preschool up through middle school, and then ways to address that skill if your child is having trouble in that area. And some of these skills, I think you'll read it and think, oh, yes, that's my kid. I know when I was doing it, I was even thinking, like, wow, I have trouble with this skill. So hopefully this will resonate with you guys. So Danielle's going to go ahead and get started talking about working memory.
The other thing just to keep in mind, too, as we go through each of these skills, is that if it's in the book highlights, if it's something that really drives you crazy about your child, that probably is an indicator to you that this is an area that you're awesome at, and that's why it's really bothering you if you see that coming from your child. So part of this is finding out what are you really good at and what are your weaknesses, and then what is your child really good at and what are their weaknesses, so you can kind of fill in the gaps. So the first topic is working memory, and this is the capacity of the mind to hold important information while completing tasks. So you go to the grocery store and you were supposed to get 4 items. When you get to the grocery store, you still remember what you were there for. This begins very early in infancy when we talk about object permanence. So mom walks out of the room, but we still know that she exists. I put a toy under a blanket, and later I can remove the blanket and see that my toy is still there. Working memory tasks require more effort from children and teens than they do in adults because the brain is not fully mature. So per age level, kids that are in preschool and kindergarten are able to follow simple commands, such as bring your backpack downstairs. They remember directions that were given pretty immediately within short time frames. And they follow familiar routines with only minimal cueing. In first to third grade, they follow more complex commands, more steps. They remember instructions for a longer period of time. And they follow 2 steps of a familiar routine with maybe only 1 cue or prompt. In fourth to fifth grade, kids with good working memory are able to follow familiar routines for chores, such as feeding the dog when they get home from school. They remember complete basic organizational tasks, such as bringing materials from their backpack home to and from school. They also recall changes in daily routines, so they recognize that on Mondays we have therapy and on Tuesdays we have music class. In grades 6 through 8, they organize more complex materials. At this point, they might keep a daily planner. They keep track of their own sports schedules. They remember to complete unfamiliar tasks. So these are things that don't happen every day, like you need a permission slip for a field trip. or you need to wear something special to school for maybe a pep rally. And then they remember multi-step instructions. So when we have delays in this area, there are lots of things that we can do to help. You can make sure that you have your child's attention before you give instructions so that you're positive that they've heard you, and then they can start to remember what you were talking about. So you can make sure that they're making eye contact with you before you give the directive. You can decrease environmental distractions before telling them something, such as turning off the TV. The less things that they have competing, the more that they're going to remember from you. You can have them repeat information back to you so that they hear it and say it again to help them remember. And you can utilize memory aids. Those could be post-its, an alarm on a phone, a visual schedule. And you may be able to cue them to check their schedule, which gives them more independence. So if they have a schedule, rather than telling them each of the steps, you can just say, check your schedule, and then they can have some responsibility for remembering it themselves. Review information that they will need to remember before a particular situation, such as reminding them before a birthday party that they're going to need to thank everybody afterwards. Discuss and determine the best way for your child to remember the information. So if you choose that you're going to use an alarm on a phone, you want to make sure that they always have the phone available to them. And for older children, you can use positive reinforcement. They can earn extra screen time or rewards with friends for remembering things that you told them. So these are a few very specific examples. You can modify the way you present the information. So typically, if you give the directions with less words, it's usually easier to remember. If you look down a little bit in this one, you could also present it with mnemonics. So maybe you use an acronym or something to help them remember, or you sing it in a song so that they will remember that back when they're trying later. You can use an external scratch pad so that they can take some notes. You can make bullet points of the most important information. You can use a picture schedule. Minimize copying from the board with a note buddy so they can take some notes and then later maybe compare their notes with a friend. And you can have a checklist at the desk before they turn in their work to hold them accountable for making sure that they put their name on their paper, their date on the paper. Same thing for chores. You can have a checklist to make sure that they properly completed a total task.
The next skill we're going to talk about is planning and prioritization. So that is the ability to create a roadmap to reach a goal or to complete a task, as well as the ability to make decisions about what's important to focus on. We do this for young children by completing a planning rule for them. They don't really have to do this when they're very young. Okay. Is this better? Yes, okay. This skill becomes more critical for them later in childhood, around like fourth or fifth grade. So for preschool age children and kindergarten, you would expect them to be able to complete one task before starting another, following a simple routine that an adult prepared for them, and complete simple tasks that have more than one step. Grades 1 through 3 should be able to complete a 2 to 3 step project. Plan ahead for something, so maybe they're going to save their birthday money for a toy that they want, or going to the toy store to pick something out. They can also complete more complex homework assignments like book reports, things that require a little bit more length and effort. For grades 4 through 5, they can start to make plans with friends, such as making plans to go to a sporting event together, going for ice cream after school, something like that. They can save up their allowance for a longer period of time and have those longer goals. So maybe they want a new bike, so they're going to save for a few months. They can also complete long-term school projects with adult guidance. Grades 6 through 8, they can complete a simple research project and make long-term plans. So thinking ahead, what am I going to do this summer? So if your child struggles in that area and you need to work on building those skills, some things that you can do. For younger children, you want to be a role model for them. Have them observing you do those things. Let's make plans for today and have them check the steps off of a list so they can watch you do it. Begin to involve them in the planning process as they get older. What should we do first? What should we do next? Giving them cueing along the way.
use highly motivating activities to foster development of this skill. So they might be more motivated to plan their birthday party than they would be to plan which homework assignment they're going to do first. So make sure that those things are motivating to them. And then you can provide support by prompting them. What is the most important thing you need to do today? And that's that prioritizing piece. You can also do things like rereading the directions before starting a task, so they have a very clear idea of what they're doing and what's expected of the task. And you can use spelling and grammar check features too. Sometimes that can be helpful for some of the older kids.
Okay, so organization is the ability to establish and maintain a system for arranging and keeping track of important items. We do this for our young children initially, and we work together with a child to teach the skill. One of the earliest ways that we teach this skill is we have a toy box and we expect toys to be placed back in the toy box when we're cleaning up. And we start with step-by-step instructions, which we gradually fade as children get older or become familiar with our methods of organization. So in preschool, in kindergarten, children place toys in a toy box and they know where their shoes go, such as beside the door or maybe in a playroom they go off to the corner. In first to third grade, they keep track of their own personal items and they also know where items go in their bedrooms. In fourth and fifth grades, they are able to place items correctly throughout the entire house, maybe help you put dishes away, help with laundry. They organize school and homework assignments. And in grades 6 through 8, they keep their own rooms clean, or we hope, and they keep track of their more expensive belongings. They know where their phones or their iPads are, things like that. So building organizational skills. You want to put a system in place. If they know what to expect and the expectation is the same, that they're going to build this skill more quickly. So set them up for success by requiring that things go in the same place every time, such as books on the bookshelf, toys in the toy box, or coats and shoes in the hall closet. We establish this via routine. Provide supervision. Follow the child and provide gentle reminders about your organizational system, and then fade those cues as you see they're more independent. And then use multi-sensory cues. So you could use an alarm so that they know that they need to clean up every evening at the same time. Or you could use a visual cue card of their closet or of their desk so that they can look at the picture and recognize where the items should go. Okay, and then just some other more specific examples. You can utilize writing organizational programs, and we'll talk about these a little bit later, but they're just some examples. You can use a visual organizer for the writing process. A lot of schools now are teaching more like kind of graphics that the kids get at school and before they make a paragraph. For math, you can highlight the operational signs. You can decrease visual stimulus, so maybe you only show one problem on a worksheet at a time. You want to underline key words when they're reading so that they can go back and pick out what's most important. Have a separate homework folder, and you can have separate folders for anything that's really important that you want to draw their attention to. Email copies of completed assignments to the teachers. You can discuss different organizational plans with the teacher. And you can use technology such as iPhones or vibrating watches to make sure that the kids are paying attention and that they remember these items. And then this is just a book that could be a good resource for organization, which is Enabling Disorganized Students to Succeed.
Thank you. Time management is the ability to estimate how much time you have available, how to allocate it, and how to meet deadlines. This starts again by us showing our children how to do this. We start by doing it for them. Independence in this area grows starting around second grade and by using reminders to check a clock and things like that. So in preschool or kindergarten, your child should be able to complete simple routines in a timely manner, finish something faster when motivated. If you hurry up and clean your toys, we get to go get ice cream. Grades 1 through 3, they can complete short tasks within adult-directed timelines.
estimate and allocates an appropriate amount of time to complete a task. So they have a general idea of how long it's going to take them to do something like cleaning their room. Time management at grades 4 through 5. They can complete daily routines without assistance. They can start and complete longer school projects without waiting until the last minute. Grades 6 through 8, they can prioritize which activities need to be done first and in how much time. And they can spread longer projects out over several days without procrastinating, waiting to the last minute to do all of it at once. So there's lots of ways that you can help kids with time management skills. You can start by trying to maintain a predictable routine. So they already have a basic understanding of the outline of their day, the breakfast, the lunch, the dinner. And then you fit the other activities in around those already established timelines. So this gives them a sense of organization. Thanks. Gives them a sense of organization of time, and it makes it easier for them to fit those activities that are maybe not so routine into that schedule. You want to give them an idea of time and expectations, so explain how long it takes to complete a certain task. Cleaning your room is going to, it's going to take you 30 minutes. Just giving them an idea. Plan an activity with them. Choose an activity that has several steps but is motivating, so maybe going to an amusement park. Okay, how long will it take to get there? How much time will we spend waiting in lines? How much time will we need in order for dinner to be home by 9? Those kinds of things. Be a good role model. That's hard for a lot of us, I think, keeping good time management skills. But it helps our kids learn from what we're doing. So try your best. So using planners and calendars yourself to model that behavior, it can be helpful to have a big wall calendar in the kitchen and have your kids do it with you. We're doing this on Friday. Let's write it up there together. Get them a personal planner for some of your older kids. A lot of the schools give them out now. Make sure they're using it. Help them use it. There's a lot of organizational tools out there, like the old Trapper Keeper kind of things. Those can be helpful. Help them organize their calendar on their phone or their tablet. And then use visual and auditory tools. So a sand timer, time timer, which we have a picture of time timer, a stopwatch, alarms on their phone. All of those things can help kids. And some of your kids are going to be visual learners, some are going to be auditory learners, so it's important to help them figure out how they learn best. If they learn best with visuals, don't do an alarm. Find something that's going to work for them. So this is a picture of Time Timer, and at the end of our presentation, I created a Executive Functioning Tools Amazon wish list. And you can click on the link, and it has all of the tools that we've talked about during the presentation on there. And it gives you a description of the item, how much it costs, how to buy it, all of that. And I think there should have been enough copies up there for everybody that you grabbed that too. So, but this is what Time Timer is. You turn the little dial, so it goes up to an hour, and you turn it, and the red slowly fades away. So it gives them a visual of how much time is left for them to complete that task. And it can be really helpful for some kids.
Yes. Okay, so metacognition. This is definitely probably the most difficult skill in the whole executive functioning skills toolbox. So metacognition is the ability to take a bird's eye view of yourself, understand how you problem solve, and self-evaluate so that you can change future outcomes. This emerges in infancy by sorting, classifying, and recognizing cause and effect relationships. People who do not have this skill frequently make regrettable decisions. They ignore important information, specifically like social cues. They don't recognize how they're making other people feel. And they often make decisions on what feels right versus what is right or what they should do that would be more socially acceptable. In preschool and kindergarten, kids with good metacognition skills can make minor adjustments on construction projects and puzzles. If a previous attempt fails, they can problem solve and try again. They can make suggestions to others to help a friend fix something or a parent fix something. In first through third grade, they adjust their behavior in response to feedback that they get from parents and teachers. They can verbalize more than one solution to a single problem and then make the best choice for themselves. And they observe what happens to others and then change their own behavior accordingly. In grades 4 to 5, they anticipate the results of their actions and try to make adjustments. For example, they want to avoid getting in trouble at school. They can articulate several solutions to a problem and explain the best choice. And they enjoy problem-solving assignments in things like video games. In middle school, they can accurately evaluate their own performance. They can recognize the impact of their own behavior on their peers and adjust accordingly. And they can perform tasks that require abstract reasoning. So, when this is missing, these are the things that we can do. You can provide specific praise for key elements of performance. So, rather than saying, you did really good at soccer tonight, we could be very specific and say, I really like how you kicked the ball that one time. That's a poor example, but we want to get very specific so that they can isolate one moment in time where they did really great. Especially if you're looking at a situation that maybe they only did part of it great, we really want to be specific about that one part. You want to teach your child to evaluate his or her own performance. Have the child identify what finished looks like. Teach a set of questions that the child can ask themselves when a problem arises. And have the child identify things they did well and things they can improve on. And typically I recommend a 2-to-1 or a 3-to-1 model. So that means if we did, and I do this with therapy students as well. So if we went into a treatment session and the student treated the patient, at the end of the session I might say, okay, tell me 2 things that you did really well and only 1 thing you can improve on. And I only let them tell me 1 thing they can improve on because we still want this learning experience to be positive. You can teach your child to recognize social cues in problematic situations. This is just information for yourselves. Research says that communication is 55% facial expression, 38% tone, and only 7% of spoken words. So we really want to point out facial expressions to children so that they understand it. And then also think about listening to people's voice inflection and help them to understand when someone is surprised or upset. You can play a guessing game to teach facial expressions. You can give your child labels for tones of voice. You can talk about clues to identify when someone is hiding an emotion, such as crossing their arms, backing away from you, and ask children to identify how their own behavior makes someone else feel.
Our next area is response inhibition, and I have an almost 3-year-old, and this is one of the hardest things for that age group. I think it's something all young kids struggle with at some point or another. And I think it's also one of the things that when kids are lacking this skill, they oftentimes get labeled as the behavior kids or having behaviors. And it's not necessarily that they're being bad, it's that they can't control their impulses. So this is, I think, probably one of the most huge areas of executive functioning skills. So what is response inhibition? It's the capacity to think before you act. It emerges first in infancy. It allows the infant to choose to respond or not to respond to whatever is presented. You need this skill for others to develop. It's a fundamental skill. Without this, children cannot initiate, sustain attention, plan, organize, or problem solve effectively. The marshmallow study, this was a study that researchers did with 3-year-olds. They put a 3-year-old in a room with a marshmallow, and they told them, okay, there's a marshmallow here. I'm going to leave the room. If you can either eat the marshmallow or you can leave it there, and when I come back, you can get 2. If you wait till I come back, you get 2. So the researcher leaves the room, and pretty much all of the 3-year-olds ate the marshmallow. Because this skill is still emerging. It's hard. So it's also more susceptible to disruption during adolescence. Their brains are still not fully developed. They've got peer pressure. They've got a lot of hormones. It can really trigger some difficulty during that time. So response inhibition at age levels. Preschool and kindergartners, they should be able to exercise basic safety awareness, not running out into the street, not touching a hot stove. They should be able to demonstrate the ability to share with peers. This is very hard for some kids. Demonstrating the ability to wait for a short period of time, also very challenging. grades 1 through 3. They should be able to follow basic classroom rules, asking to use the restroom before they just get up and run out of the classroom, not shouting out answers. They should be able to wait in a line with appropriate personal space. In grades 4 and 5, we would expect them to be able to resolve simple peer conflicts without using physical means, remembering and following rules without being reminded. Don't talk to strangers, no chewing gum in the classroom. They should be able to demonstrate the ability to regulate emotions with prompting. So they may get upset in difficult situations, but they're able to calm down with cueing from an adult. In middle school, they should be able to walk away from conflict when provoked by a peer, and they should demonstrate impulse control with thinking before speaking. So, how can we help kids with this area? There's a lot of things we can do. We can have them work to earn desired items, so teaching them that they have to wait to get what they want. Not giving them immediate gratification all of the time. Immediate praise, but then waiting to earn, so that's delaying the gratification. So things like token system, a sticker chart, earning an allowance, using first-then schedules, first this, then that. First you do your homework, then you can use the iPad. Again, some of the things we've already talked about, sand timers, time timer, all of those things can be helpful. Implementing consequences for undesired behavior. So an example would be if you don't share your favorite toy, it gets taken away for 3 minutes. Setting them up for success. Review the rules before they go into a situation where you know they're going to have a hard time. So we're going to a birthday party today. The presents are for your cousin, not for you. What are you going to do? Talking about these things before they happen. Using a social story with them so they can think about these things before you put them into that situation that you know they're going to have a hard time in. We have some links for social story websites and books, too, at the end. Other things that you can do, practice response inhibition through role-playing situations. What would you do if an older child shoved you on the playground? Talking to them about those things before they even come up, so they already have an idea in their head when that situation does arise. Reminding them of the behavior you're working on and providing immediate positive reinforcement as soon as you see it. So remind the child before a play date that they will need to share their favorite trains with their peer. As soon as you see them exhibit good sharing behavior, tell them, great job, I'm so proud of how you're sharing. You earned a sticker for following the rules, or whatever, you know, the motivator may be for your child. Be consistent. Make sure, you know, as many caregivers as possible are following the same kind of plan. Make sure that they're setting your child up for success. In the classroom, you can have them write questions down, jot them down on a piece of paper if they're a child that has trouble shouting things out, and then, you know, at a more appropriate time, they can ask the teacher those questions. Using visuals, sometimes pairing a verbal with a visual, so signing stop when you say stop, is more effective to a child than just saying it. Actually using a stop sign picture. Putting your finger to your lips to indicate that they need to be quiet at that moment. And then reinforcing positive behavior. Great job raising your hand. Have children hold on to their pockets or hold on to a fidget toy if they have trouble in the hall or waiting in a line. And just a reminder, safety first. In dangerous situations, you don't want to test these things out. If your child, you know, has a chance to wander or run, you always want to make sure that you're putting safety first.
Okay, so the next topic is emotional control. And a lot of kids who have trouble with response inhibition also have trouble in this area. So emotional control is the ability to manage emotions to achieve a goal, complete tasks, or control or direct your own behavior. This is the ability to control your temper and manage your feelings, especially in the areas of anxiety, frustration, or disappointment. This is the ability to channel positive emotions in difficult situations. So we might say to ourselves, I'm a strong person, I can get through this. This develops in infancy when babies gradually learn the ability to self-soothe.
In toddlerhood, this can be a difficult time because a lot of times we're struggling with tantrums and recognizing changes in routines. So children with good emotional control. In preschool and kindergarten, these are kids that recover quickly when there's a change in routine. There was a fire drill today, no big deal, I come back to the classroom very easily and get started again. They don't resort to physical aggression when they don't get their way. And they maintain appropriate arousal level in a group setting with peers. So they don't get overly excited when playing a game or overly upset when something goes wrong. In first to third grade, they handle adult criticism without a meltdown, and also maybe without a lot of kind of back and forth. You know, some kids don't take criticism very well, and they start getting, and they're telling you why they did it, and they're making excuses. These kids are able to, you know, modify their behavior. And they adjust behavior quickly depending upon the situation. So if recess is over, they're easily able to go back to the classroom and prepare for work. In grades 4 to 5, they appropriately handle losing a game. They remain calm when they're teased, and they understand that they won't always get what they want. In 6th to 8th grade, they have the ability to read and interpret social cues and act accordingly. An example is, my friends gave me disapproving looks when I cried because my kickball team didn't win. I need to be a better sport next time. They anticipate outcomes of certain situations and react appropriately. I understand that my team might not always win this game. And they demonstrate an appropriate level of assertiveness, so they ask for help when needed and can say no if peers are pressuring them. So ways to work on emotional control. For younger children, you can regulate the environment. So you want to build in routines such as mealtimes and bedtime so that they know what to expect and structure the environment to promote their success. You want to avoid putting children in a situation that will be overstimulating or have a plan for removing them if the situation becomes too much. So an example is you might have a quiet space for them to go at a birthday party. You want to discuss the plan with your child in advance. And you want to teach your child coping strategies. And some examples of coping strategies may be earplugs or noise-reducing headphones if they're easily overstimulated in a large crowd or by auditory stimulus. You can have a designated quiet space at your home or in the classroom where they can go if they just need some time to themselves. They can try hugging a pillow, which gives some proprioceptive input. If you've worked with OTs, you probably know about that. You can give fidget toys if they're really kind of antsy, deep breathing activities, iPods with relaxing music, or muscle relaxation techniques, which you can easily find these things online on YouTube. You want to develop a script that you can use with your child in a challenging situation so that you're prepared in advance as well. An example might be, I will do my best if I get overwhelmed, I will ask for a break. So you could review that for your child before they go to play zone and are overstimulated. You can say, let me know if you need a break. Let me know if there's too many people. You can read stories that demonstrate the behavior that you want to see. Just a good example that most people have heard of is The Little Engine That Could. And then don't be afraid to ask for help from your therapist or counselors, social skills groups, or self-help books to give you some guidance in this area, because this can be very frustrating for parents to work through on their own.
The next area is sustained attention, and I have to admit that when I was working on this presentation, in particular this section, anytime anybody walked by, I started talking to them, and then I was reading what I was writing, and I was like, oh, I have trouble with sustained attention. So I'm sure many of these areas are maybe standing out to you in your minds, too. Sustained attention is the ability to keep attention to a task while distractions are present in the environment. The ability in young children depends on their interest in the task. It's more difficult when it's a non-preferred task, such as chores or homework. And the expectation, just as a general rule, for homework should be approximately 10 minutes per grade level. So 10 minutes for first grade, 20 minutes for second grade. And I know that is probably not what comes home a lot of the times, but that's what developmentally should be expected of our children. So at preschool and kindergarten level, they can sit and attend for circle time. They can sustain their attention for 5 minutes of a non-preferred activity. They can sit seated for a book, like 1 to 2 books.
grades 1 through 3. They can start to pay attention for a longer amount of time for non-preferred activities. They can complete 20 to 30 minutes of homework, and they can sit through meal times. Grades 4 and 5, they can complete a 30 to 60 minute homework assignment, and they can sit through longer events, church, sporting events, those kinds of things. Grades 6 through 8 completes 60 to 90 minutes of homework with breaks as needed, and they can complete non-preferred activities of longer durations, upwards of 2 hours. How do we build sustained attention? We start by setting up the environment for success. We want to limit distractions. If they're doing their homework, make sure they are in a comfortable, quiet space. The TV is off. There's not too many bright lights on. You can do things like playing classical music quietly in the background, anything that helps them pay attention. You can use a break card. So kids in the classroom, if they have a really hard time sitting, instead of just jumping out of their desk and disturbing the whole class, maybe having them have a little laminated break card on their desk, and they can hand it to their teacher, or they can hold it up, and that's a cue to the teacher in a more appropriate manner. I need to get up and move. I can't sit here any longer. Provide supervision. So attention can improve when somebody is providing reinforcement and encouragement. I think we all do a little bit better when we know we're being watched. So that's one way you can help your kids work on that. Remember that progress takes time. Be patient with them. Set small goals. If they can attend for 5 minutes, set the goal for 7 minutes. Don't make huge goals. You're looking for small improvements. Use visuals or audio cueing. Visual aids of time can be beneficial, like those stand timers or time timer or wristwatch. Audio cues can also be beneficial. So a self-monitoring audio tape that cues at a specific time. Are you paying attention? Are you paying attention? I don't know anyone that's done that, but that was one of the suggestions. Increase the interest and motivation in the task. So turn tasks into games and provide incentives or rewards for completing their work on time.
Task initiation is the ability to begin projects or activities without undue procrastination in an efficient or timely manner. This is the ability to start both desired and non-desired tasks, and the tasks that take a long time, this skill takes a long time to develop and begins by teaching children basic routines, such as your morning routines and bedtime routines. In preschool and kindergarten, they can immediately follow a simple directive from an adult. So grab your coat. They stop a task and begin a new one when asked. So maybe they're building with Legos and you ask them to clean up. They initiate a simple task, such as cleaning up their toys, with only one prompt or cue. In first to third grade, they remember and complete simple routines on their own, and they start tasks immediately after being asked. In fourth to fifth grade, they complete more complex, familiar routines, 3 to 4 steps at a time. They complete several similar tasks in a row, so they can easily bring home their homework, start with math, move to language arts, do a science project, and then put it all away in their backpacks. In grades 6 through 8, they demonstrate the ability to create their own schedules. They start tasks that are agreed upon with minimal reminders. So this might be after dinner every day, you do the dishes. And so you shouldn't have to remind your child every night when dinner is over that it's their turn to do the dishes. And then they stop a preferred activity to complete a non-preferred activity. So how to build task initiation. The best pointer I can give you in this area is to phase yourself out as quickly as possible. When we're constantly nagging at our kids to start something, we kind of develop a confrontational relationship over the activity. So one, it'll be a lot less stress for both of you if it's not verbal cues that you're always using to get them going. And also, this skill will develop a lot quicker if we give them some external cues that are not us, so that they don't have to wait for us. So we find a lot of kids that become kind of dependent on mom or dad telling them what's next. So if you are able to do some of these other things like visual cues or routine driven, then they can start to initiate themselves, or a timer reminds them rather than you. So you want to set a timer to begin a task, and then you want the child to learn that they set their own timer or turn off their own timer. You can use reinforcement, so immediate praise, when your child begins a task in a timely manner. So the very first time, you didn't have to tell them to wash the dishes and they went and washed the dishes. Make sure you know you've told them how appreciative that you are. Use visual cues. You can put post-its up around the house or set an alarm on a phone. You can use planners. A lot of people use schedules for like grooming. If you have a teenager that's, you know, not wanting to brush their teeth before bed, you could put brushing their teeth, washing their face, all of that on an evening routine that they could easily see. You can simplify the task into steps. So this goes to that picture schedule too. You can really break down, if you need to, the steps of things. You know, lots of kids will brush their teeth, but they don't replace the cap on the toothbrush. So if you had all of the steps written out for them, then they could reference that and make sure they complete the total task. And allow your child to be a part of the process. So you can give them some choices. Allow them to choose when and how a task will be completed within reason. And then this will also ingrain some ownership in the task from their part.
Flexibility. Flexibility is the ability to revise plans in the face of obstacles, setbacks, new information, or mistakes. It's an adaptability to changing conditions. And as children get into toddlerhood, they're expected to become more flexible. They're starting preschool. They're having different babysitters come to the house. They're going on a family vacation. Their routines are being disrupted a little bit more, and they're having to be flexible. We begin to expect them to handle unexpected changes in daily routines and handle this frustration with minimal difficulty. We can expect this to happen usually between the ages of 3 to 5. So in preschool or kindergarten, you would see this by a child being able to share their toys, adjusting to changes in their daily routine, a snow day or a field trip. Mom's working late today. You're going to go to grandma's house after school or after preschool, grades 1 through 3. Following adult redirection, adjusting to unplanned situations, and interacting well with their peers. In grades 4 through 5, they shouldn't perseverate on changes. Why was soccer practice canceled? They shouldn't be getting stuck on something. They should be able to hear it once, process it, and be able to move forward. They can complete open-ended homework assignments, and they don't require as much structure. In grades 6 through 8, they can adjust and manage rules of different classrooms and teachers, and they can make changes as needed when a peer or younger sibling is being inflexible. How do we work on flexibility? We start by trying to limit one change at a time if possible. Try to stick to a schedule and routine, and when there are changes, you want to kind of let them know about it in advance. So for example, if there's going to be a fire drill and you know your child really has a hard time with loud noises, they have a hard time with disruption and change, having the teacher give them a warning. Sometimes that will help them adapt to the situation a little bit better. Using a visual schedule. Here's your schedule for today. Let's look at it. Oh, look, this part has changed from yesterday. It's going to be okay. These items are still the same, but it's just this one that's different. Discussing how to handle situations where change occurs. Again, social stories can be very effective. There's a website there that works with social stories. You can discuss how to handle that particular situation. Your teacher's going on maternity leave. You're going to have a new teacher. What will you do if the rules are different? Break tasks down into smaller steps. Knowing that they only have to complete one step at a time can sometimes help reduce that anxiety and stress and encourage success for them. You want to give them choices. When possible, allow them to have some control over the situation. So a lot of times when change is occurring, they feel a loss of control. So if you can give them back a piece of control, they may be more successful. So you can do things like say, I understand you're upset that the water park is closed. Would you like to go to the playground or to the library instead? So you're giving them an alternative that's something, it's adult directed, but they're still getting a piece of independence in what choice they're making. Walk your child through a difficult situation. So if your child's nervous about attending their first soccer practice, don't just drop them off and leave. Go with them, provide support, gradually fade yourself out as they become more comfortable. Help them develop coping strategies that they can use in those difficult situations. Counting to 10, deep breathing, progressive relaxation, yoga poses. And then there's another reference book called What to Do When Your Brain Gets Stuck. So that provides some other ideas. You also want to allow additional time when change occurs. You can provide a place for self-calming if you anticipate that the child is going to react negatively to the change. So give them a place and a time to kind of process the situation and the change. You can utilize a first-then statement, a first-then picture board. Highlight what is staying the same, like I said before. So all of these things are staying the same, but this is going to be different today. Utilize tools like a visual schedule or a time tracker, and take a peer or familiar object to new or different situations. You can also utilize video modeling. So that's kind of a new technique that's being used in like social skills groups and things like that, where they're actually watching a video of maybe another peer acting out the situation and the appropriate behavior. And then you can have them act out the situation, videotape them doing it, and then show it back to them. So they learn by watching others or themselves actually demonstrating the appropriate behavior. You can do a dry run, and you can teach phrases to repeat, so a little cognitive behavioral kind of thing. This is different, but this is not bad. Something like that that they can say to themselves.
Right, so our last executive function skill is goal-directed persistence. This is the ability to set a goal and work towards it without being sidetracked by competing interests. This is the last of the executive skills to develop, and it begins by your persistence and encouragement for your child to keep trying when they are attempting to learn a new skill or completing a task that is challenging. So in preschool or kindergarten, children seek assistance for conflict resolution, and they problem solve and try different solutions to reach a goal. In first to third grade, they stick with difficult tasks for longer periods of time, such as completing a jigsaw puzzle. And they work on a task for several hours or over the course of a few days. In fourth to fifth grade, they learn to save their allowance for several weeks to obtain a desired item. They follow a practice schedule to get better at a task. So maybe they're taking music lessons or learning to play a sport. In sixth to eighth grade, they increase their effort to improve their performance. So maybe they try harder in a math class because they know that their grade is not good. They work hard to earn money, so maybe they're mowing lawns or babysitting, and they practice a skill without being reminded. A way to build goal-directed persistence is to start early with simple goals. So give assistance and cues along the way to set them up for success, but maybe you help them with a simple puzzle. You want to choose tasks that are motivating that they can work for. Maybe your child really likes to build Legos, so you pick a more complex Lego activity that you can build together. You want to provide incentives, such as earning money for chores. Slowly increase the amount of time that's required to reach each goal. So maybe your child was working for a trip to Chuck E. Cheese, and the first time they needed 5 tokens and it took about 2 weeks. You know, next time maybe you want them to order 10 tokens and it's going to take a month. Use visuals such as a progress chart, tokens or marbles in a jar, something visual. Countdown program, there's a widget on a Mac that you can do to help them count down. And make sure that rewards are with high level incentives. They're not going to be driven to work towards the goal if the end reward is not going to be worthwhile.
Okay. The resources for our presentation, there's 2 main books that we used. The first one is called Smart But Scattered by Peg Dawson and Richard Ware. And the second one being, Late Lost and Unprepared by Joyce Cooper Hahn and Leslie Dietzel. So those are both great books.
These books were the ones that we talked about a little earlier in the presentation, What to Do When Your Brain Gets Stuck, just to give you a picture of kind of what it looks like so it's familiar to you, and Enabling Disorganized Students to Succeed. The next two, I do not have the ALERT program here with me, but that's the How Does Your Engine Run? You may have heard of it. This one is really good for our kiddos that have ADHD, and we talk about, you know, if we're really high arousal level or really low arousal level, how we can get them going. There's a lot of sensory information in this first book about things that you can do, whether it be swinging or jumping or certain foods that you can eat that will help to change their arousal level. The next one I do have is Zones of Regulation. This is newer and very popular right now. The great thing about Zones of Regulation is it really hones in on two things that the other programs don't, and that is the child's emotional response to different stimulus, and then how their emotions make others feel. So that's a great resource to have, and it's pretty parent-friendly. So if you bought it, you probably could walk yourself through the guide.
Also, a lot of school districts are implementing this classroom-wide. So not just for one student, they're doing it with the whole classroom. So that is a tool that, you know, perhaps your school or your classroom might be interested in looking at.
The last one we have for like a self-regulation behavior program is called The Way to A. This is better for your younger kids, and it's really basic. So A decisions are good decisions, and they get us good things, and B decisions are decisions that usually lead us kind of down the wrong path. So if you have like that preschool, kindergartner kid that you want to start to address things with and you need simple concepts, this is really a good place to go.
There's a couple online resources that we used. The LD Online, that's a learning disabilities website. They have some really good information on there about executive functioning skills. And then adayinourshoes.com, that has some measurable IEP goals. If your child is on an IEP and you want to be addressing some of these areas, that can give you some basic goal ideas for how to address that on an IEP. Okay, I love Amazon, but I think that it's great when not only do we list out things to use, but I think it's great for people to actually like see them and know, how do I make this, how do I buy this, how do I actually get this in my hands and use it. So I created an Amazon wish list. It's called Executive Functioning Tools. And I left copies up there with every single item on it. And you can also click on that link or type it in, and it will populate and show you everything that we talked about and some other ideas that we've come up with. And if you somehow lose the link and you don't have the printout, if you search my email, if you click on Find a Wish List and you type in my email, it will pop up. So that, I'm not going to delete it. That will be there forever for you guys to look at. So the very last thing that we have that you guys can just look at quickly if you want, they're up here. Jenny talked a lot about social stories, and sometimes coming up with your own social stories can be hard. They're great for your kids. There's also a lot of books, so if you just get out there and Google what you're looking for, you know, this is books that someone already wrote about ADHD. So sometimes I drive my mom crazy, but I know she's still crazy about me. There's like the Don't Give Up Kids, so you can teach goal persistence. There's lots out there if you just kind of Google the skill that you're looking to find. You can find some stories that are appropriate to different age groups. We'll leave all of these up here on the stage if you want to come up and just kind of flip through them. So
we made it.
Yay! I'm going to
thank you.
I'm going to give them the cards that I have, but if you have cards, if you can just like wave it up in the air, and I'll come around and collect any other ones. And then I'm going to hand out these surveys while we're talking. Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You want, we can just like take turns reading them and decide to.
Okay, so the first question is from Building and Prioritizing. Is a lack of metacognition a common factor in autistic kids and adults? And that's,
I would say,
definitely true.
Yeah. That's the last skill to develop. So if you're having trouble with some of the other skills, those are like a building block, a foundation to get to that those higher level skills. So I would say
probably, yeah.
And remember, the other big factor in metacognition is not just able to evaluate yourself, but able to evaluate yourself in a social situation. And a lot of those kids are the kids that are missing those kind of social cues.
There is a link. One of the Amazon items I put on there, I think maybe two of them, were kind of flashcard type things on recognizing emotions and facial expressions. Sorry. So that's something you can do to, if you do have a child with autism and you want to start working on what do others think of me, well, first they need to be able to understand and read facial expressions. So that might be something where you want to start.